Vegas live and underway here on ESPN Plus alongside my good friend and colleague, colega Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Herc, we will be discussing many things on this show, including both Chicharito and Chicharitor in episode 108 of Football Americas. You gotta love it. The Southern twang making its way into Major League Soccer. We got a lot coming up on this edition of the show. We're gonna hear from Jeff Carlisle. He's got the latest on the Portland Timbers and Andy Polo. We're also gonna hear from the boys over on the Chum Chat podcast. That's Tanner Tesman and Johan Gomez, a couple pros who are coming for our jobs, Herc, in the media. And of course, we're going to get some bold predictions about the upcoming U.S. roster for the World Cup qualifiers. All of that, as usual, available for you as well in podcast form. But Herc, let's start the show as we have the last few episodes. With the tragedy that occurred now 9 days ago at a Liga MX match between Querétaro and Atlas, we saw unprecedented levels of fan violence. Very different scenes as Liga MX returned to action on Friday. Coincidentally enough, Querétaro visiting Necaxa. And here you're seeing in the 62nd minute, Herc, both teams coming together to stop the match.
Yeah, this is when the match Querétaro versus Atlas was stopped and the incidents flared. And wow, just horrific scenes that we saw. It's a nice gesture, como dicen en español, un gesto bonito of what Mexican soccer can be. But it can't just stay with this. We can't just leave it at that, which oftentimes happens in Liga MX.
Yeah, we saw it elsewhere. We should also note that game, Necaxa choosing to not have fans in the stadium based on what happened just a few days prior at La Corregidora. So it was a return of Mexican football, Herc, just 6 days after what we saw in Querétaro. I wonder, you know, emotionally, how you felt watching soccer again.
You know, it was weird because part of me wanted to be like, you need to move on, you know, things need to progress. But another part of me is like, this is too early. Like, the only reason you're having these games is money. It's the only reason. And it's business as usual. And it's, let's get this going again to forget about it. We can't forget about it. That's a reality. You shouldn't be able to forget about this. You need to do things. You need to move in action so these horrific scenes are never replicated again.
Yeah, I'm with you. It did feel too soon, right? It felt like maybe the cloud, and for me, really, the questions that we've been talking about on this show, the questions of whether these barras have been infiltrated by organized crime have not yet been answered. And until they're answered, it feels like soccer is honestly not even secondary. It's way down the list of priorities. And this was supposed to be, Herc, a huge weekend in Mexican soccer.
Yes.
I mean, clásicos after clásicos. This was supposed to be a weekend where the environments of Mexican football were on full display, and we didn't see that. Some of it by choice and some of it by rule, right? We know Chivas at Estadio Akron, and we'll talk about that game a little bit later. They didn't let their barras in. Obviously, the America barras not allowed to travel, but it just generally seemed like the atmospheres that you need for Liga MX weren't really there, especially in a big weekend. And I wonder if you think, because we've talked about this off camera, if maybe fear played into a little bit the lack of atmosphere and ultimately what we saw, which is a lack of attendance.
A lack of attendance, yeah, that could be fear-based as well. Let's be honest. What we saw in Querétaro versus Atlas, unprecedented. We've never seen that form of violence. We have never seen people beaten half to death because still to this moment, even though our own eyes can't believe what we saw, our own eyes can't conceive. We like the concept of no deaths after the videos I saw is very still hard for me to grasp, but no confirmed deaths. You see people laying bloodied, naked, in what is very much like organized crime-like behavior. So until you can put the proper protocols in place to assure the safety, I, as a father, as a family man, would not take or subject my family members to something like that, especially so soon, Seb. You're talking about 3-4 days after the incident happened and you're opening up the stadiums. And by the way, you talk about the low attendance and these barras not being present. Reports, pictures of these barras just taking off their jerseys, buying regular tickets, and still showing up to these games and gathering inside these stadiums. So until these protocols are put into place, for the life of me, I can't just accept how these games were just played like nothing had happened.
Yeah, it feels like the powers that be want us all to move on, but you know how we are here on Football America, so we will not move on, Herc, until all of our answers All of our questions, I should say, have been answered. Let's make the difficult transition to what's happening on the field in Liga MX, because as we said, it was a big weekend for a couple teams. So let's start with the Clásico Nacional. Chivas hosting América at the Estadio Akron. It was a Clásico sin colores, and early on, off the palo there.
Alexis Vegas, Vega off the palo. How about this one? Roger, nice little save. Jimenez with a sweet little save. Sorry, Roger with a nice little shot. There's some chances, Seb.
Yeah, some chances. Corner here, Iram Mier off the crossbar. And the ball eventually cleared, but huge moment in the match here. Jonah Dos Santos, uh-oh, he gone.
Yeah, it's his second of the match. He never sees it come and catches young Sebastian in the face, and that'll do it. Second one he sent off.
More from the youngster here. Nearly sets up a goal for Alexis, but he misses the clear chance. And then, again, the scenes that we saw at the Querétaro-Necaxa match, the match stopping on the hour mark. América really didn't have too many chances. There's one in the 84th.
Diego Valdez, he still has yet to show up. The refuerzo not very well with Club América. Another one, Ángel Saldívar, can't get it on frame. There were some chances, but as they promised, un clásico sin goles. Or was it sin colores?
Yeah, it was sin colores. Oh. The result leaves Chivas 9th, América 17th. Herc, so I think pretty much everybody who watched this game, even the neutrals, probably came away disappointed. But which fan base do you think should be more disappointed with a scoreless draw in the Clásico Nacional?
Yeah, it's not even a question for me. It has to be Chivas. Last place, América. The worst offensive
second
team.
Second to last place. Second
to
last place.
Are they second to last place now?
Yes.
Are you forgetting that most teams have only played a game or two games less? But yeah, okay,
I'm counting on goal differential.
On goal differential, fine. Speaking of that goal differential, abysmal attacking team, abysmal defensive team, one of the worst. Memo Ochoa happens to be one of the most goals scored on goalkeepers in all of the Liga MX. So that in question, now that that's out of the way, that's who you're playing, you have to take care of business at home. You have to make sure you get the 3 points. Alexis Vega is in an all-time form. Alexis Vega, by the way, was very good. You had your chances to win this game. Alexis Vega off the post. Iram Mier off the post. Iram Mier had a goal called back. Countless opportunities against a very lifeless America team who was playing a man down for the majority of the second half. I don't know how you can look at this game and say this wasn't a game where Chivas should have won and won handedly. Last 8 years, it's almost a decade, Seb, Club Chivas has been 9th place. That is their form. That is their reg. That is the norm for them. Their average is 9th place in Liga MX. That's exactly where they are now. Beating America, this America, wouldn't have gotten up to the charts, probably up into 4th or 5th. This is a game they should have won. It was a game that could have changed their season, a parting of the waters, and a huge opportunity missed for them.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that like Chivas fans are not disappointed. They were chanting Fuera Leaño throughout the game. and it's not the first time, huh? It happened 2 weeks ago at their home match on the 26th of February as well. So they're obviously disappointed. They should be more disappointed. Right now, they should be more worried because to your point about America, America is terrible. There's nothing left to be salvaged from this season. They're not even going to make the repechaje playing like this. But I think there's now a threat that Chivas, who, as you say, sit 9th right now on the table, could also be so bad that they end up in the bottom six and miss the repechaje. So I would be very worried if I were a Chivas fan. I would be disappointed not just for what's happening with Leaño. They're obviously, those tensions, those seem to be maybe right now, Herc, kind of spilling over into the team. We see the case with Jesus Angulo, who's what, now banned because of a YouTube channel. We got Gudinho, who's benched because of a contract. I mean, all these things start to add up, and it seems like Chivas is really going off the rails. If I could make, because I know a couple América fans, and they're not disappointed at this performance, right? So if I could make a point for them, you didn't get the new manager bump, which you expect, right? You didn't fire Solari to not have any reaction from the team.
Well,
okay, it was a Clásico Nacional. They played like that. There's no turnaround coming.
Yeah, but Seb, you even in the naming of the interim coach, did they get it wrong? They went with the U-20 coach instead of the auxiliar Gilberto Adame. So Gilberto Adame, when he sees he's getting pushed over and forgotten going to the U-20 coach, he says, you know what? I see where this is going. I'm going to remove myself from this situation, remove myself from this train wreck. I want nothing to do with this. It seems to be a management problem at this point, besides being a lack of talent problem on the field. So, yeah, if you want to hang your hat on that, I guess because it's Chivas for an American fan, sure.
No, I mean, look, here's the other reason América is disappointing, because this is the worst. I've been following América since the mid-90s, okay? I think this is the worst America I've ever seen. I don't think Chivas fans would say that. And this is the first time in a long time that I've gone into a Clásico Nacional and really, truly believe that America were the underdogs and that they could not just get beat, but get beaten very badly by Chivas.
You know, America's okay,
there's
had
been a
couple
major
stretches.
Swing in this rivalry.
America's had a couple stretches, but I don't think they've ever stayed in last place or around the last place for so long.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the other big game from Saturday night. Actually, we're going kind of reverse chronological order here. This one was played first, Cruz Azul and Pumas y Mexico City Derby. The team separated by just 3 points in the table. First goal comes right around the half-hour mark. Luis Abraham off the corner kick for Cruz Azul.
You know what they say, dos cabezazos en el área is a goal. Two headers in the box, that's a goal. And this is what happens here. Aguilar to Abraham. Abraham's not going to miss from there. It's 1-0.
So Cruz Azul would celebrate, but the celebrations cut short. Not all that much longer. Fabio Alvarez, Rogerio, they combine, and it's 1-1.
Fabio Alvarez has not scored until this moment in the last 14 games for Pumas. What a moment to get that goal.
Fabio Alvarez, of course, of LA Galaxy fame. Well, fame is probably a strong word. How about this game-winning golazo? Juan Escobar in the 70th.
Juan Escobar is a center back or a right back. That's what he plays. He's not an attacker, but my man's got 5 goals, 4 at home, plus that banger.
Cruz Azul then winning by a final score of 2-1. Both those teams have CONCACAF Champions League coming up this week. We got Liga MX on your screens on ESPN Plus on Tuesday. Monterrey against FC Juarez. Ah, Bucetich against Tuca. Nice little managerial matchup in Liga MX East in the midweek. All right, let's run it back, Herc. Tecatito staying hot. His second La Liga assist of the season as Sevilla drew 1-1 against Rayo Vallecano on Sunday.
Oh, he's going to look so good playing for Tigres after the World Cup. I could already see it. This is what he does best. One-on-one. Don't give me that space. I'm very good at finding that. Oh, and that's a hell of a finish. But Tecatito with Tigres, I see that happen.
Teca setting up Thomas Delaney there in the 63rd minute. Sevilla, by the way, dropping super important points in the draw. Really hurts their title chances. They're now 7 points back of Real Madrid. Plus, Real Madrid have a game in hand. They got Europa League coming to Sevilla on Thursday against West Ham. Mexico's final World Cup qualifying roster expected to drop Tuesday. We got some big news brewing. Rogelio Funes Mori not expected to be on the list. Neither is Carlos Salcedo. Of course, Funes Mori not his best moment, but he's also dealing with a muscular injury in his right leg that's kept him out. Some thought Funes Mori's absence could mean Chicharito's in. Not so fast. Reports in Mexico, Chicharito sigue borrado, remains erased, deleted from the Mexican national team picture by Tata Martino.
Blacklisted, you can say it.
Okay, so we got no Chicharito, we got no Rogelio Funes Mori. What if something happens to Raul Jimenez here? What's plan B, Herc, for Mexico?
Plan B is Santi Jimenez, the 20-year-old from Cruz Azul. Yeah, that's Santi Jimenez, the son of El Chaco Jimenez, the Cruz Azul legend and Pachuca legend. Santi Jimenez, when you look at him, he's not your prototypical 20-year-old. He's got size, he's very fast, he's very good at combining. So when I think about players that can try to replicate what Raul does, I think about Santi Jimenez. I think about the season they won the championship at Cruz Azul. Cabecita Rodriguez was on fire, en fuego. When was he at his best? When Santi Rodriguez was next to him. Santi Rodriguez has that Raul Jimenez-ness about him that he makes other players better around him. He combines so well. But I will leave you with this lasting image. I was at the MLS All-Star versus Liga MX, X All-Stars here in Los Angeles, California. There was a play where Santi Jimenez in the first half had a straight dead sprint, okay, with Walker Zimmerman and dusted him. Just completely at dribble, outpaced one of the best center backs, one of the best defenders in Major League Soccer. And I remember thinking to myself, like, man, this guy's got some wheels. He's goal dangerous, and he's putting it all together right now. I honestly think he's the future of Mexican soccer, and he may just be the best shot you have at the present right now.
I'm always going to bring up experience, you know, especially ahead of the decisive World Cup qualifiers, right? The last three. He doesn't have a meaningful minute playing for Mexico yet. 2 games, but both of them were friendlies. I think there's probably a good reason to be concerned there. Maybe some parallels here, actually, since you mentioned Raul Jimenez, to Jimenez's role in the qualifying for 2014, right? I think he was 21, 22 when he joined that group, had the huge goal against Panama, which eventually helps him get to the playoff
against
New Zealand. Is he the player that most closely resembles Jimenez in the pool. Is that why you're saying he should be the replacement? Because he's the like for like?
A little bit of both. A little bit of him being the like for like, and also him being just a clearest option, because there's not a lot of options. You're very thin at nine in the Mexican side. If it's not Funes Mori, if it's not Raul, you're talking about Henry Martin. Who else are you talking about? Alan Pulido is on the shelf. JJ Macias. I mean, who are you talking about here?
Yeah, maybe making somebody like a Chucky Lozano, Alexis Vega, one of those guys play through the middle as a nine. But yeah, you're right. The options are just not really great right now for Tata Martino.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
To Major League Soccer, the good, the bad, and the ugly from the weekend that was. Great game, Herc, is where we'll start between the Sounders and Galaxy in Seattle on Saturday. 33,000 in attendance, national television, and Chicharito scoring in the sixth minute.
That damn Chicharito. Look, he's faster than a hiccup. Look, a good little combination play right there. This is a great run. Ravelo sent out of the midfield, and then Chicharito doing what he does. Instinctive striker in the box, 1-0.
Yeah, Raheem Edwards, they're making a nice play. A few minutes later, Jordan Morris from his backside muscles it over the line.
We'll give it to Jordan Morris for the effort, but that might have been Julian Alvarez. Julian Alvarez right there.
45th minute, Freddy Montero winning a penalty. No doubt here, right, Herc?
Yeah, it's a penalty. You can't lunge in the box. Montero gets it right there with his left foot, feels the contact. He's a veteran striker, went down.
Yep, Julian Araujo, the guilty party.
Montero Araujo,
steps
thank
up.
You.
You got it. We'll get there eventually. Montero makes it 2-1. 48th minute, Douglas Costa, the deflection.
Douglas! Just like you meant to, right? Yeah,
yes.
Right off of, who was that? Yeymar? Is that Yeymar Andrade Gomez?
I believe it was. Yeah, it was
right
Yeymar.
Right off his face.
Seattle getting one back. Alex Rodan, Arriaga, after he just hit the post. 3-2.
Yeah, he's making up for that not-so-great defending on that Chicharito goal. Good header.
All right, chance for a late equalizer. Efra, same spot he did it against Charlotte. Wow, so close. So close to a replay.
Start of this game, he's feeling himself. He picked that corner. This could have been 6-6, honestly.
Yeah, great game. Great game between two teams. Maybe a preview of the Western Conference Final, Herc, huh? Seattle's 200th win in MLS history. The bad? The weather. Let's just focus on the weather here. We'll start with Inter Miami hosting LAFC. Herkin, what were gale force winds and pouring rain? Not ideal.
Did you say gale force?
Gale force winds, yes.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know what a gale is either. I'm not going to lie to you, but I think it's pretty fast. It's
yeah,
whipping.
And then it's the
whipping
rain. About. I caught the second half of this game as I was getting ready to go to my daughter's AYSO game. Like, honestly, I was like, what is going on here? It was not good.
All right, you thought that was bad. Gillette Stadium was worse. The Revs hosting RSL on Saturday. One of those games where you definitely needed an orange ball, Herc.
Yeah, I don't think they started out with an orange ball, by the way. But they got an orange ball towards the end, and a good thing, too. It ended up being a pretty good game. I mean, New England up 2-0, and then, 12 minutes left. They give up three goals and this banger.
Yeah, Tate Schmidt with a game winner. And afterwards, the Revs playmaker, Carles Gil. Yeah, he wasn't happy.
I don't understand nothing today. I don't understand. Play like this. Do you think we play football, soccer today? Do you think we can play soccer today? I don't care about if we win, we lose. I don't care. They score three big goals. I don't care. It's impossible to play football today. I cannot talk with my teammates. I cannot write. I cannot do anything. It's impossible. This is no football. Stop the f***ing game. We play tomorrow or any other day. I don't care. This is not football. It's impossible. Like, what is try to be long balls to try to the wind is impossible. I don't understand nothing.
Carles Gil, all sorts of fired up. Herc, are you telling me to get lost or are you siding with the irate MVP?
Listen, I understand what he's saying, and he's probably not wrong. There may have been some conditions throughout that match where you probably could have called the match, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw them play midweek against Pumas in the same type of weather. And they throunced Pumas 3-0, and I wouldn't hear anything. You know what? This was wrong. We shouldn't have played against Pumas this way. And by the way, when they're winning 2-0, you know, against Salt Lake with 12 minutes left, I didn't hear or feel the same energy. But when you give up three goals in 12 minutes, that may have a little bit to do with why you're so upset. I get what he's saying. I understand that. But there's a difference in energy here.
Yeah.
Pumas, Salt Lake, 12 minutes left. The fact that they lost and gave up that late winner could have something to do with it. It is what it is. I don't know what the solution is.
You've been in a snow classico, right? And there are some times where you watch these games and you're like, man, this really is not soccer. Like, what are we watching here? You know, these guys are struggling to really even keep their footing. It's tough because you never really know where to draw that line. It's so subjective, right? Like that game that you guys played against Costa Rica in 2013.
That's unplayable.
That's unplayable, right?
And this did not look unplayable to me. And honestly, okay, look, say what you want about it being the weather. It's a very difficult thing to for lack of a better term, weather to go through, but you have to go through. And if it's playable for one team, it's playable for the other. It shouldn't be an excuse. What's the alternative? You change the calendar?
Yeah.
Do you know what New England's like if you want to line yourself up with the FIFA calendar?
This is probably more evidence, right, that you can't do that. I mean, if you think Gillette Stadium is bad on, what was it, March 12th? Imagine what it's like on February 12th, January 12th. It is, you know what it is? It's ugly, Herc. It's ugly, and that's where we're going next on the good, the bad, and the ugly from the weekend that was in MLS. New York City FC. Now, this should not be ugly. They unveil their 2021 MLS Cup Championship banner. The only problem is it was Sebi size, pint size banner. What happened there?
I'm sorry. We got a perfect spot for you guys at Yankee Stadium. Just wait till you see it. Can you go down to one of these copy places and get me a banner? How big? You'll figure it out.
I mean, that is really, and even look at it, it's like plasticky and cheap, you know? It's not even like a nice felt or anything. Come on.
The Yankees literally said, put up what you want, but you take it down after the game.
New York City, by the way, won the game 4-1 over Montreal. So something to celebrate there. Not worth celebrating what was in the mentions of the original tweet of this banner, including Herc. The ratio, I think that's always like the first thing that you look for. But Twitter had a field day with New York City FC
in this
banner.
I mean, how could you not? Who thought this was a great idea? Who thought this was a good idea? Who signed off on this? Oh, that's just wrong.
You
under a microscope.
I tell you, Twitter is undefeated for a reason. Do not slip up, especially not around U.S. soccer or MLS. This is a good one.
Oh, come on. Who's passing notes? Juan Carlos Osorio? Oh, unbelievable.
New York City FC. They are the champs. They are the champs. MLS on ESPN Plus next Saturday. Charlotte FC going for their first win ever against the New England Revolution. Again, Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Coverage starts right here on ESPN Plus.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The scandal around the Portland Timbers' handling of domestic violence allegations against Andy Polo continues to intensify. The latest developments, Genesis Alarcón, the estranged wife of Andy Polo and the alleged victim, says two representatives of the Timbers staff attempted to dissuade her from pressing charges against their player, claims that seem to be confirmed by a recording released just this past week by Alarcón's lawyers. For more on this, we welcome into Football Americas the man who wrote the article that you read 5 days ago on ESPN.com, Jeff Carlisle. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Jeff, always good to have you on the show with us. Welcome back.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with the kind of meat and potatoes of this article. What exactly is Ms. Alarcón alleging that the Timbers did here, Jeff?
Well, what she's alleging is that about 2 weeks after the alleged incident of domestic violence, she was paid a visit at the home that she shared with Polo by two representatives of the Timbers. We know that one was Jim McCausland, who was the Timbers' head of security. And then the other is an unidentified female who Alarcon's lawyer characterized as a lawyer, a fixer for the Timbers. And in that visit, what she's saying is that she was basically pressured, or it was suggested that she not press charges against Andy Polo, and that if she did so, she would receive, you know, housing, food, any other means of support so that she would not be left out onto the street. The Timbers responded by saying, we did no such thing. We did not say implicitly or expressly that that we were offering any kind of inducement for her to not press charges. But then a day later, her lawyer released an audio recording in which it's alleged that one of the representatives of that meeting, the female lawyer, she said that we're hoping that you don't press charges. So it's kind of a drip, 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 you know, more details coming out almost with each passing day.
Jeff, we've heard the audio recordings. They sound pretty damning. So my question is, what are the Portland Timbers saying? And more importantly, who is saying it? Or are they just releasing statements?
Well, they've just been releasing statements. And after the audio recordings were released, the Timbers said, we're not going to have any more comments. We're going to let the investigation run its course, which is also what MLS has been saying. I mean, granted, back on February 22nd, I think it was, Don Garber gave a very impassioned defense of Merritt Paulson and his father, Hank Paulson, and, you know, the owners of the Timbers. And but since then, you know, since these other revelations have come out, the league is now saying we're not going to comment any further. The investigation is ongoing, and that's where they're leaving it for the moment.
On top of that, there's kind of this issue that the Timbers didn't really report this when it first happened to Major League Soccer. I wonder, Jeff, kind of what you're hearing from your MLS sources about their reaction just generally to how the Timbers have handled this.
Well, I think there's no doubt that they handled this poorly. They had multiple opportunities to kind of do the right thing, either report it to the league. They could have put Andy Polo in the substance and behavioral health program. He was injured at the time. He wouldn't have missed any time on the field. But instead, what the club has alleged to have done is that they pressured the victim to not press any charges. And they kind of kept this quiet for, you know, the better part of 9 months. And they even exercised Polo's option in December. I mean, this was a player that was going to be in the team's plans. So I think there's wide recognition that, you know, the Timbers did not handle this well at all. They could have done any number of things differently. But now it's a point where everyone's saying, hey, let's wait for the investigation to be completed. But again, that's limited to how the Timbers handled this. It's not going to have any kind of creep in terms of the scope of this investigation and you know, how it might spread to, say, what happened with the Portland Thorns as well.
You know, Jeff, not too long ago, we saw Delloy Hansen, ex-owner of Real Salt Lake, lose his team for lack of institutional control. What are the probabilities or possibilities that this could happen with Merritt Paulson and the Portland Timbers?
Well, realistically, I don't see Merritt Paulson being pushed out. I mean, you heard the impassioned defense that Don Garber gave to the Paulsons, at the preseason press conference, right before the season started. I mean, he said he had full faith in the leadership that the Paulsons were delivering for the Timbers. So when you hear something like that, to me, that's a strong hint that while there might be sanctions, the ownership is going to stay in place. At least that's what I think is going to happen. Now, of course, new revelations could come to light. New information could come to light, and we'll see if that's the case. But I think as it stands right now, I think Portland is probably going to get a pretty hefty sanction. You know, what form that takes, who knows, whether it's just a fine. I mean, that remains to be seen. But I don't see the ownership being forced to sell or anything like we saw with Delloy Hansen and Real Salt Lake.
To your point, Jeff, on Don Garber's comments, those were a couple weeks before not just these new revelations, but also when we found out that the Portland Timbers had not, in fact, told Major League Soccer. So there have been more recent developments since we heard that impassioned defense, as you called it, from Don Garber. There he is, Jeff Carlisle. Thanks, as always, for being on Football Americas, and you can read more from him on ESPN.com and now exclusively on ESPN+. Jeff, thanks for the time.
Anytime, guys.
There he is, Jeff Carlin. You can read the entire article over on our website, ESPN.com, the latest on the Portland Timbers and their handling of Andy Polo and the domestic violence allegations against him.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
To the women's game, CONCACAF Under 20 World Cup qualifying tournament final. El Clásico Norteamericano, USA and Mexico. The USA getting an early goal the third minute from Michelle Cooper. That's not how you want to start a final.
No, don't give Cooper those gifts. Leading goal scorer of the tournament also ended up golden ball. Don't give her that gift.
Yep, she had eight in the tournament, and in the end, the U.S. goes on to win this game by a final score of 2-0. There is good news, Herc, for Mexico, and that's that both these teams will qualify for the upcoming Under-20 World Cup in Costa Rica. Of course, Mexico upsetting Canada in the semifinal, 1-0. The U.S. didn't concede a single goal, Herc, in this whole tournament.
No, that's their seventh title, right? De La Peruta, I mean, that's just De La Peruta's seventh youth title. That's insane to me.
The Under-20 World Cup, perhaps not something the U.S. will dominate. Yes, they've been there a lot, but at the last Under-20 World Cup, the Americans eliminated at the group stage. So maybe a revancha coming in Costa Rica later this year. To Liga MX Femenil, the Clásico Nacional. Chivas coming from behind to beat América 2-1 at the Estadio Azteca. Herc, this one definitely the better of the two Clásico Nacionals.
Without a doubt, Gatti Killer, who wants her some? We miss her at Tigres.
Gatti Martinez with the penalty to put America up 1-0. But after that, it was the Alicia Cervantes show. She gets a brace. She now has her, get this, 8 goals against America in her 2 seasons at Chivas. That'll make you a Chivas hero pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, it's not this goal. I mean, the defender, watch this double wall pass right here. Gets it right back. And look, she looks up, see the keeper cheating. Near post. Whoa. Remontada en el Estadio Azteca. It's your night, Alicia. It's your night.
Beautiful finish there at the near post. And Chivas pick up a huge win. Again, these are two of the top teams in Liga MX Femenil. Chivas second now.
Still undefeated.
Fourth. NWSL schedule. We have a release date. Now, Herc, you know this is one of the kind of longest running jokes in American soccer. When will the NWSL drop its schedule? The latest reports, Wednesday is the day. That's only 2 days before the NWSL Challenge Cup starts, which is on Friday.
What is going on? I have a family of four. I'm looking to buy Angel City season tickets. I can't buy tickets if I don't know if I can go to the games. Like, what is the league trying to do to me? What is the league trying to do to its fans? If you can't go to the game, if you don't know you can go, how are you going to buy the tickets?
Fair enough. Challenge Cup starts Friday, Racing Louisville against Kansas City. And Saturday, Herc, we get the first ever San Diego Angel City FC Derby. Should be fun. Let's run it back. Americans abroad style. Ethan Horvath, another clean sheet for Nottingham Forest. His third clean sheet in his fifth straight start.
Oh, just in time. Mexico's right around the corner. You know, last time he played, he had a pretty good game against Mexico. Zach Steffen's coming back from injury. Matt Turner's still on the shelf. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying.
Just saying. Worth noting, Zach Steffen did return to the bench for Manchester City, so some hopeful signs there for Greg Berhalter and company trying to figure out who will be their number one for these huge upcoming World Cup qualifiers. George Bello making his first Bundesliga start for Arminia Bielefeld, Herc.
It's what you got to keep doing. You got to keep playing. It's the only way young players are going to get better if they play. And if the level is higher, all the better.
First start for Bielefeld. It came in a game against Borussia Dortmund. Now, Bielefeld ended up losing the match 1-0, but still pretty good news for George Bello there, the former Atlanta United youngster. Same game, featured a couple Americans, Herc, actually on the other side. So Gio Reyna, he's back, played 27 minutes for Dortmund. And Leonard Maloney played as well. So that's two Americans in the same game for Dortmund.
Maloney, a dual national. Gio Reyna, he looked very good, very sharp in this game. I know it was limited time, only 27 minutes, but it was there. He actually had a chance, a couple chances to score a goal. I thought it was very bright from him.
Did you get your patented Otro tweet out?
Not yet. I am waiting.
Not yet on Maloney. Okay,
I've already done the Otro tweet with him, but I'm waiting for him to, you know, yeah.
Jordan Pefok with his league-leading 17th goal of the season, Herc, for Young Boys.
League-leading 17th goal. This man scores goals, won't stop scoring goals. That's all he does. He's a 9 in the box, one-time finishes. That is a luxury that one cannot afford to lose.
Unfortunately for Young Boys, they didn't end up winning the game. Match ends in a 2-2 draw. All right, Herc, so we expect the U.S. World Cup qualifying roster to be dropped sometime later this week. And we can usually expect one pretty good surprise, at least one pretty good surprise, from Greg Berhalter, the man in charge. But I want to get your big surprise. What is your bold prediction for the list we're going to see in the coming days?
There are two players, two excommunicated nines that were no longer part of the national team setup that will come back. And that is Josh Sargent of Norwich in the Premier League and my man Jordan Pefok. Jordan, I cannot stop scoring goals, Pefok. These two, Josh Sargent, who's not playing as a nine, who's playing as a winger, but comes in into the box and performs nine-like duties. You already know what I've said about Josh Sargent. For my money, he's the most talented nine in the pool. He's got all those skill sets. But if there's one pure finisher in the pool, if there's one pure goal scorer in the pool, one guy that I need a goal I want to have, that's Jordan Pefok, because he's proven it over and over again. Against Honduras, the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal, comes on, dagger, takes him to the final against Mexico. He's that type of player. He's proven it. He proved it against Manchester United in the Champions League. He's got that about him. He's a different type of player than you have, and he's the hot hand. I've been the hot hand in my career. There is something to be said when you're in that zone, when the goal is just like a rainbow. It's so big you can't miss. You thrive for these moments. I've been the guy that's been ignored from the national team. I know what it's like. I know he's chomping at the bit to get back. I know that he must be livid with Greg Berhalter and his staff, even if he won't admit it. It's natural. Okay, it's human nature, and that's what you want out of your nine. I want a player like Jordan Pefok. So those are my two guys right there.
It's crazy that a bold prediction would be that a player who's leading a league in Europe in goals to get called into the national team camp. If you think of any other time in the history of American soccer, if the dude is leading any league in Europe, I don't care if it's the Czech second division, he's getting called in.
He's your most informed nine.
Yeah. But to the point here is that there's a lot of choices. Maybe not a lot of great choices for Greg Berhalter. There are a lot of choices at number nine. So what you've done here effectively is you've taken two players who are forwards, and you're dropping him in, which means you got to pull a couple guys out. So let me tell you there who would be my bold prediction to miss out if you're bringing in Pefok and Josh Sargent. I'm going to say, one, Giassi Zardes is not going to get called in. And my other bold prediction here, yes, Ricardo Pepi could be the odd man left out. Let's start with Zardes. Zardes isn't even starting for the crew, Herc. You know, Miguel Berry has taken his spot.
Yeah.
So I think if we take Greg Berhalter at his word and form is important, then Giassi's artist cannot be called into this camp. And I think the same has to be said for Ricardo Pepi, Herc, because if you look at Ricardo Pepi's trajectory since arriving in Germany and Augsburg with the Bundesliga, it was starting games, it was not starting games but still playing, and the latest is it's not playing at all. He's got one game. It's this Saturday against Stuttgart. If he doesn't score in that game, what if he doesn't play in that game? There's no argument from a form basis to call Ricardo Pepi in. So for me, those two players right there were the bold predictions to be missing out. Who would you be leaving out if you're going to bring two forwards in?
Giassi Zardes, but because what Columbus is doing to him is disgusting. They're freezing him out. So I think if form really does matter. But Ricardo Pepi is going on 5 months without a goal. At some point, we have to say maybe this move to Augsburg was not the right one.
All right, let's get to our top 10. Plenty of right ones in that as we celebrate the goals from the weekend. But before we do that, let's remind you about El Clásico, which, of course, just like the Bundesliga, La Liga, you can see here on ESPN+. Coming Sunday, March 20th, our coverage starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time here on ESPN+. One more thing before we get out of here, Herc. Alphonso Davies back to training with Bayern Munich. He'd been sidelined since January with a heart issue. Julian Nagelsmann telling us it'll still be 2 to 4 weeks before Davies returns. But this is Great news.
Massive news, not only for Canada, they're pretty much already qualified, but for CONCACAF. This is the best player in CONCACAF, and he's back. Fonzie's back!
Back. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Football Americas. For Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar. A reminder on the next edition of the show, which is coming up on Thursday, an exclusive Sam Borden one-on-one with Sergiño Dest. Do not miss it. As always, a reminder, you can find us on the podcast as well.